Hello and welcome to Forensic Diaries podcast featured by Forensic Times. If you are new to podcast, you are in the right place. I am Shweta, your host for today's episode. Today we'll be talking about one of the most dangerous serial killers of America, Ted Bundy. If you don't know anything about this man, you'll be surely surprised and question yourself if he was a human or a demon in clothes of human. To find out, stay connected and listen to our today's episode. Between 1969 and 1975, a series of brutal sexual homicides started occurring through the Pacific Northwest, Utah, and Colorado. In just 6 months, six women have been abducted. Panic in the area reached peaks when Janice Anott and Denise Marie disappeared in broad daylight from a crowded beach. This bold abduction yielded the first break in the case. On the same day, several other women remembering being approached by a man who had tried but failed to lure them to his car. They told the authorities about an attractive young man with his arm in a sling. His vehicle was a brown Volkswagen and the name he gave them was Ted. After releasing this description to the public, the police were contacted by four people who identified the same Seattle resident, Ted Bundy. These four people included Bundy's ex-girlfriend, a close friend of his, one of his co-workers, and a psychology professor who had taught Bundy. Ted Bundy was born in Vermont. His mother was Eleanor Lewis Cowell and his father was unknown. His grandparents, ashamed of their daughter's out-of-wedlock pregnancy, raised him as their own child. For nearly all his childhood, he believed his mother to be his sister. His grandfather would regularly beat both of them, causing her to run away with her son when Bundy was 5 years old. Eleanor met a hospital cook, Johnny Bundy, and she married him, who adopted the young Ted Bundy and gave him his last name. But Bundy disliked his stepfather and described him as a very low-key man who earned less money to his girlfriend. Little else is known for sure about Bundy's childhood, as he gave conflicting accounts of his early years to different biographers. In general, he described an ordinary life punctuated by dark fantasies. Ted Bundy's first attack was an assault on an 18-year-old Karen Sparks, a student and a dancer at the University of Washington. Bundy broke into her apartment and knocked her unconscious with a metal rod from her bed frame before sexually assaulting her with the same object. She suffered for 10 days in coma and was left with permanent disabilities. After 1 month, Bundy attacked a woman named Helly. He broke into her apartment, knocked her down and clothed her body and took her in his car. Helly was never seen again, but her skull was discovered years later at one of the locations where Bundy dumped his bodies. Afterward, Bundy continued targeting female students in the area. He developed a technique. He used to approach women while wearing a cast or appearing otherwise disabled and ask them to help him put something in his car. He would then knock them down and bind them, rape them and then kill them. He dumped their bodies in a remote location in the woods. Bundy often revisited these sites to have sex with their decaying corpses. In some cases, Bundy decapitated his victims and kept their skulls in his apartment, sleeping behind them. Bundy once said, The ultimate possession was in fact the taking of the life and then the physical possession of the remains. According to him, murder is not just a crime or lust or violence, he explained. It becomes possession. They are part of you, becomes a part of you, and you two are forever one. And the grounds where you kill them or leave them become sacred to you and you will always be drawn back to them. Over the next 5 months, Bundy abducted and murdered five more female college students in the Pacific Northwest, namely Donna Gail Manson, Susan Elaine Rancourt, Roberta Kathleen Parks, Brenda Carol Ball, and Gregon Hawkins. Investigations grew stronger to find the serial killer, and pile of evidences along with eyewitnesses pointed towards Ted Bundy and his car. But unaware of the growing interest of law agencies, Ted continued committing these horrendous crimes. He raped and murdered women while he moved from Utah to Colorado. Finally, in August 1975, Pandey was pulled over while driving through a Salt Lake City suburb. And police discovered masks, handcuffs, and blunt objects in his car. This was not enough to arrest him, but a police officer realized that Bundy was also a suspect in earlier killings, so he put him under surveillance. He had sold his car, but the officers found his car, Volkswagen Beetle, and they discovered hair matching three of his victims. With this evidence, they put him in a lineup, where he was identified by one of the women he had attempted to abduct. But soon enough in 1977, he escaped the jaws of law enforcement agencies. He was serving as his own lawyer and hence he was allowed to go to the library unshackled where he took the chance. He jumped from the library's second floor window and hit the ground, running, disappeared into the trees before the guards returned to check on him. In Espen, he stole a car, but the reckless speed with which he left Espen made him conspicuous and police officers spotted him. He was recaptured after 6 days again, but he again escaped from the cell after 6 months. He was so smart that he studied the map of the prison and figured out that his cell was directly beneath the living quarters of the prison's chief jailer. The distance separated measured just a small crawl space. So Bundy traded with another inmate to get a small hacksaw. And while his cellmates were exercising or showering, he worked at the ceiling, scraping away layers after layer of plasters. He made a very small crawl space. That is why he began deliberately cutting back on meals to lose weight. He was quite smart. This time, he stole a car immediately and got out of the town to Florida. There, he tried to maintain low-key, but because he couldn't find a job without identification, he started stealing. And he was back to his very strong compulsion for violence. On January 15, 1978, 2 weeks after his escape, Bundy broke into an Omega sorority house on the Florida State University campus. In just 15 minutes, he sexually assaulted and killed Margaret Bowman and Lisa Levy. He beaten them with firewood and strangled them with their own stockings. He then assaulted Kathy Cleaner and Karen Chandler. Both of them suffered horrific injuries, including broken jaws and missing teeth. Bundy then broke into the apartment of Cheryl Thomas, who lived several blocks away. He beat her so badly that she lost her earring permanently. On Feb 8, Bundy abducted 12-year-old Kimberly Deanne Leach from her middle school and murdered and dumped her body on a pig farm. A month later, police arrested a man named Chris Hagen for driving a stolen vehicle. But they soon find out that the person they thought was Hagen actually was Ted Bundy, who was wanted for murder in several states. Throughout his trial, Bundy sabotaged himself by ignoring the advice of his lawyers and taking charge of his own. "I would describe him being as close as to being like the devil as anyone I have ever met," said defense investigator Joseph Alloy. Unfortunately, Bundy left little evidence at the sorority house. They found no fingerprints and none of the surviving victims could identify their assailant. When the police dusted Bundy's apartment for prints, they found none. The only piece of evidence that police had to work with was a bite mark on the buttocks of Lisa Levy. But this evidence proved to be of great value in further investigation. Here, forensic odontology played a great role in finding out the truth. Bundy at first refused to give an impression of his teeth, but a court order soon forced him to do so. Bundy's teeth were not uniformly aligned and chipped, and on analysis, they found that the bite mark on the butt of the Lisa Levy was the same as of Bundy's. He was also held accountable of the murder of a 12-year-old Kimberly Leach based on the fibers found in his van that matched the girl's clothing. The case was solved based largely on forensic evidences gathered from the bite mark on the buttocks of Lisa Levy and fibers found in his van that matched the victim's clothing. Ted Bundy was convicted and placed on death row at Florida's Rayford Prison. where he suffered abuse from other prisoners and conceived a child with Carol Ann Boone, whom surprisingly enough he had married while he was on a trial, on January 24, 1989. Ted Bundy was finally executed on an electric chair. Hundreds of people gathered outside the courthouse to celebrate his death. So, all of this has led authorities to suspect that Bundy must have killed 30 to 40 women or even more, making him one of the most infamous and terrifying serial killers in American history. There is this fact that Ted Bundy described himself as the most cold-hearted son of a bitch you'll ever meet. And yes, his crimes certainly prove that true. That brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you for joining us today. You can also connect with us at forensictimes@gmail.com. This is Shweta Singh signing off. Bye-bye. Stay home, stay safe.